You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with author and filmmaker Edgar Caret. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
When I write my stories, I don't want to solve things in life. I just want to persuade myself that there is a way out. You know, maybe I'm in a cell, maybe I'm trapped, maybe I won't make it. But if I can imagine a plan to escape, then I'll be less trapped. Because at least in my mind, there is a way. And my parents as survivors, they always talked about this idea of humanity. My parents always said to me, when you look at people, don't look at their political views. They're not that important. Look at the way that they look at you. If they see you, if they listen to you, if they can understand your intention, even if it's a failing one, then they're your people. And if they can't, it doesn't matter. You can vote to the same party. You can hold the same ideas. They're not your people. And I think that, you know, in the Second World War, a lot of people had experienced betrayal, experienced the world shaking. And I think that when I came with my mother and father's thing, that there are people, there are human beings, and there are people who want to be human beings but are still struggling. And you go with humanity. You go with the person that can go against his ideology if his heart tells them something, you know. And I think that right now, where I'm really in a double whammy kind of situation, where I'm blacklisted in my own country. Like in the Israeli Fox News, they quote to boycott Grossman's book and mine. The city in which I've been teaching for more than 20 years, I can't hold a public event there because I'm a traitor to my people or whatever. And at the same time, I was supposed to have a big tour in Australia. It got canceled because I'm Israeli. I was supposed to come to Edinburgh, cause problem because I'm Israeli. So the idea is that I feel there is some kind of feeling of intolerance that I don't have any problem with the fact that the people in my country think that killing a Palestinian civilian is legitimate. I can argue with them, but I have a problem with the fact that there are people that don't want to allow me any kind of opinion. And I'm saying I grew up in an occupying country with many strong liberal forces, but all the time I knew that the fascists will shut you up. And today, everybody wants to shut you up. The liberals want to shut you up. The anti-vaccinator want to shut you out. The pro-vaccinator want to shout you up. Everybody's fighting what movies to take off YouTube, you know? And the idea is that, you know, that the way that I was raised is that you grow up and you learn who you are by making countless mistakes and paying for them. You know, it's really like you do something stupid, you're not considerate, then you get punished. And today we live in this kind of a world of one strike, you're out. I see young people as a student, they're shivering. They know that if in one wrong context, they'll say one wrong sentence, you know, they'll be sleeping on the sidewalk. And I find that this kind of oppression, when people talk about a maid's tale and stuff like that, then for me, it's already here. And it's much worse because it always in our fears, there is one group oppressing another. But we're living in this twisted world where everybody is oppressing everybody. To say that this is the worst time of my life would be an understatement. But I think that generally I lived with some kind of an illusion in a dialogue with the world, that the world listens to me and I listen to the world, and that I can change it a bit and it can change me a bit. And I'm saying right now, with all the horror happening in my region, with a needless war that kills thousands and thousands of civilians and keep kidnapped, tortured, antenna, then this idea that there is something that you're fundamentally against, it's as if like somebody torturing, that you really understand in your core that if you could do one thing, you would change that. And understanding that what you're doing doesn't work day in, day out for 2 years. So it's really this feeling of futility is something I have to fight in every sentence. So when you ask me a question, I have to master some energy even just to look at you and say something. I'm saying like, I hope I'm not victimizing myself, because I'm not saying, please, I'm going to pass my hat in the end and everybody throw me back. But my feeling may be intense, but I think that it's the universal human feeling right now. It's this feeling of a powerless God, of an entity that knows of all the atrocities around it, but has no power whatsoever to change them. I can blabber as much as I want on my Facebook page, but in the bottom line, people are dying. I can't do anything about it. All the people I talk about, they're not stopping it. They can boycott me for not saying what they want me to, or can share my posts because they think that I'm saying wonderful things. But all of us, it feels as if all of us are spectators in some kind of a show that we have no effect on. It's like there is a football game, and the fans are from the different team are punching each other at the seats. It doesn't affect the game. The idea that I want my team to win, the idea that I want them to lift the cup, it's like I would give my heart and kidney and brain for that, but I just can't. And it's heartbreaking day in, day out, just to be reminded how powerless you are against the world. A few years ago, I was in Boston and I spoke in one of the biggest universities there. I spoke to a group of students and there was a super intelligent young student there. And at some stage, this student said to me, "Listen, I'm a lesbian and I won't stop fighting. The place that I live will become a safe space where I can go hand in hand in the shopping mall to buy myself an ice cream and kiss my partner on the lips without anyone looking at me. And I won't fight until this happens." And I told her, there is no such thing as a safe space. The words that you wish for would be realized. It would mean that your Catholic, homophobic, elderly neighbor, when he'll go to shopping mall, he won't live in a safe space, because it's totally unsafe to him to see two girls kissing. So this idea that there is the right way to live, that we should push it down the throat of is wrong. And yeah, when you and me, we used to live in a village and I was your neighbor, then you say, people ask you, "What do you think about Edgar?" And they say, you said, "He talks too much. I go, I want to buy something in the grocery store. He catches me, start talking to me about AI and what would happen if he would be born an alien. But whenever I go overseas, he waters my plants and he takes care of everything." So in the end, you have some kind of a complex view of myself. And in this view, if I'll say a sentence that is wrong, you say, "Edgar told me this dumb sentence, but he's very good with dogs." And it will be this complexity. But in this kind of world where we're living, where we just meet people on a sentence, on an incident, it's very similar to some kind of a global road rage scenario, where in the US, people can get out of the car and shoot somebody because he cuts them. And there is this kind of package that is human. But the moment that you just meet people on one thing, it becomes monstrous. It becomes an inquisition, a McCarthy, a kind of witch hunt kind of feeling. There is this tale that is probably an urban legend, this guy that he suffered from a very heavy depression and wasn't really functioning. And one day he got up and he said, "I'm going to take a shower and I'm going to go and I'm going to pay all my debts and I'm going to be okay." And he took a shower and he went to his cafe and he said, "I owe you $20. I want to pay you the $20. They say, "It's okay. No, no, come another day." And he went to another place and he says, "I owe you for the laundry." And he said, "Look, everything fine, just go." And then he went to Main Avenue and he saw the Twin Towers on fire. And then he went home and he brought a blanket and he put it on the pavement and he lay down. And he felt a relief and he said, "Finally, everyone is feeling the way I feel." Now, I can say that when I lived in Israel before the 7th of October, the sensations of a doomsday fear, the xenophobia, the fear from the other, the enmity, they were always there. When you see this war, it's an eruption of something. And as a writer, you sense it not as an action, but as some sort of an energy. It's as if you and me will sit in the room and I'll say to you, "Mia, can you smell this?" And you will say no. And as a writer, I have maybe a better sense of smell. But what I'm smelling is that there is a body in a closet in the room that we're sitting on. So maybe the body will be found later. but the stench was there long before it. I'm saying, sometimes when you go to a hotel, there is this kind of pianist that plays in the bar. I would say that as a writer, I was playing in the bar of humanity life. So there was this thing. Now, currently, life for all, the trajectory of humanity feels as if we're constantly falling down the stairs. So I'm playing music for people who are falling down the stairs. Charlie Chaplin kind of music. Doing whatever I can to empathize with you, to hope with you, to see the good in life in you while we're both falling down the stairs. It's like I feel that I'm the band on the Titanic. I'm playing a good music for getting your trousers wet in cold water. I'm playing the music that together with that will make it most bearable. I think, let's say, if someone would tie your hands and tell you it's only for 3 days, you would feel that every second of your life, your inability to use your hand the way that you want to use your hand. Now, this doesn't mean that you won't be able to live your life. The people that like you will feed you and shower you and turn on the TV for you. But you will feel that you're not a complete human being. And I feel that when you don't tell your story, then it's as if you have a limited existence. And I think that when I talk about choices, we can always have some kind of choice. But I'm saying that the story we choose may be the most crucial choice that we make, because this story will affect all the other choices. If the story that I tell myself is that I really want to speak to you because we talked on a podcast and it was very interesting, and I think that we are living in a very problematic time, and that it's important to share ideas so people will find their own way while listening to other people, then that's one story. If I say to myself, I published a new book and I have a newsletter on Substack and I must promote it, so I should go out and do PR, it's another story. Under those two stories, my experience of the interview would be different. My answers would be different. My attitude toward you would be different. So I'm saying the moment that you say, I'll make all the decision, I'll just outsource the story decision, then you become a slave. We outsource our decision making, we outsource our imagination, and we basically sit, and whenever we're bored, we look on the phone and the phone will make it interesting to us. When you go to Instagram, you can always say, I want to see the next movie, and then you feel that you choose. But if you'd be a slave and I say, Mia, so what would you want to do? Build me a pyramid or clean my house? You can have the illusion of freedom, but you don't have freedom. We don't feel enslaved. It's just this kind of big machine moving forward and pushing us. And if it pushes us, it has nothing against me. So I have nothing against it and I can't even recognize it. So I'm saying, when I decided that I want to open this kind of storytelling program, it came from the idea that I feel that telling your story today is a life skill. You cannot be free if you can do anything on your own, but in the bottom line, you succumb to the story that is giving to you. And by the way, one of the things that parts of the story giving to you, it's a story telling you that it's important how fast you do things. That's the story that is giving to you, and that's not the story that you should take. What I really think is that when you talk about this kind of AI human competition, then there are two things, at least two things, that human being can do and AI can't do. And I think that it's the ability for obscurity and ambiguity. This, when you have plus and zero, you see them as mistake. If I say to you, Donald Trump is a danger to democracy, but he has such an amazing charisma and nice character, then this is something that is very difficult for AI to make this dance. If I ask you, are you for it or against it? Is this thing a massacre or not a massacre? Then the human thing to do would be to stutter, to say, Now, when we meet the AI, and in the AI world, we treat our humanity as a mistake, as something that needs to be corrected, to be outsourced and solved. For example, if you do something bad to me, okay, if you steal money from me, so me saying this, I trusted Mia and she betrayed my trust, but she's a good person and she stole that money because she wanted to buy herself a canvas and she seemed to be sorry. So will I forgive her? How will I forgive her? We live now in a world saying, what's the AI solution? Let's outsource it. I can hug her and say everything is okay because I don't know why, because this is outside of my jurisdiction. Why? Because an AI wouldn't know that. So I'm saying that our fight is not to be better than the AI in what the AI does better than us. Our fight is to keep what's human in us, and that we are now saying if the AI doesn't have it, we don't need it either. What I always say is that we can call it different names, but names are not as important as action. So let's say if I say it's ethnic cleansing and want to stop it, and you say genocide and you want to stop it, and the third person said it's just horrible, but it's neither, then I say we're a coalition because the people who are dying don't care. They just want us to stop it. And the fact is that because we are unable to stop it, then we take our frustration on the other people. It's like in Israel, it's always the same. Whenever the government and the army do something horrible, they boycott artists and academics that are all liberal left-wing, and the artists are already boycotted and blacklisted. But the word boycott, why? Because if I'm an artist, it's much easier to boycott an artist than to boycott a bank. So the question is, am I doing something that resonates in the world, or am I doing the things that is the easiest for me to do? It's not a good solution. I really think we all have a hope for a good and full life. I got on a taxi a couple of weeks ago. The driver recognized that I'm a left-wing liberal because I'm outspoken, and most taxi drivers are right-wing conservative, not to say racist. And he said, I know you, and we're going to have a good long talk until I drop you off. And I said to him, listen, man, I don't mind arguing with you, but I will only argue about things that the outcome of our argument will have an effect in real life. So I'm willing to argue with you about war in Gaza only if you convince me that the war is good, we'll go to Gaza in your car, take guns and help them. And if you, I'll convince you that war is bad, we'll go to Gaza and we'll stand in front of the soldiers and tell them not to shoot. If you're willing to do that, I'll argue with you. The driver said to me, why do you say this bullshit? Nobody's going to listen to us anyway. So I said to him, you know what? So let's argue if we stop in a gas station and buy a Coca-Cola or not, because I had enough of arguing things that I don't have any effect about it. When I make this argument, it makes me feel important. I feel like a prime minister or maybe an American president. And I say, what? Trump is dumb. I'm smarter than Trump. But in the end, it has no effect in life. So I really say that the moments that we'll be able to limit ourselves to the scope of the effect of our action, this doesn't mean that we should comply with things that we cannot stop. But the core of our action should be not to stop people from saying words. You know, when I was a kid, they would say, sticks and stones may break your bones, but a word would do me no harm. We are living in the world, people will murder you for a word, and that you can get away with murder as long as you shut up. So it's time to take this reverse word and put it back so it will make some sense.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.